Hi everybody, this is Lucy Sanders and I'm the CEO of the National Center for Women and Information Technology, or NCWIT, and this is one in a series of podcast interviews that we're doing with women who have started IT companies, and they've given us some fabulous stories and wonderful advice along the way. And this is another one today with Margaret Wallace. With me, Lee Kennedy, Tricalix co-founder and also a director of NCWIT. Welcome, Lee.
Thanks, Lucy. It's great to be here.
And also, Larry Nelson, W3W3 Internet Radio and King of Technology in Colorado.
The voice of
technology of Colorado. Larry, welcome.
Thank you. I'll settle for Lord Nelson.
Lord Nelson. I don't need to be King. Absolutely. So, Larry, why don't you say a bit about W3W3?
Well, we're a web-based internet radio show. We started in 96. In 1998, I predicted the internet would die. But anyhow, we got past all of that. In the meantime, we host many wonderful business shows. We're all business. We have a high-tech bent. And I have to tell you, this series that we've started here so far with NCWIT has been absolutely extraordinary. Get great feedback from business leaders, business owners, as well as even young people who are listening.
Well, they're going to love the interview we have today with Margaret Wallace, who is the co-founder and CEO of Rebel Monkey. And I have to tell you, I just love the name of this company.
Yeah.
And when you go to Margaret's site and you read things like this, we're about fun times for all, so stay tuned for exciting announcements.
Yes.
That was just wonderful. Before Rebel Monkey, Margaret was co-founder and CEO of Skunk Studios in San Francisco. So tell us a bit about your new company, Rebel Monkey. It was just launched this year in the casual gaming space.
My pleasure, and hi to everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. I'll give you some background on Rebel Monkey. We are, as you said, a casual game development house. That means we focus on video games that are for the rest of us, the people who don't have 8 hours a day to spend learning how to use their controllers or don't feel like hooking up a PlayStation or an Xbox, although casual games do appear on those platforms. You know, we make games that hopefully will reach the widest audience possible, and at least initially, casual games are distributed on the internet, but you'll find them, as I mentioned, on mobile phones and on other console platforms. Rebel Monkey is a company that has been around since the beginning of 2007, so we're a brand new company. I have co-founded Rebel Monkey with a gentleman named Nick Fortuno, and Nick is probably best known as being the lead designer on the blockbuster mega hit Diner Dash. Diner Dash is a really fun downloadable game which focuses on the life and times of a woman named Flo. She's the heroine in the game, and you play the game to build her restaurant empire. And for some reason, that game just kind of ignited the imagination of casual game players everywhere. So Nick Fortuno has really enjoyed a lot of attention and success because of that title. And I met him about 5 or 6 years ago, and we just realized we had a lot in common in terms of our vision for the casual game market and for video games in general. And that's kind of how Rebel Monkey was formed. Rebel Monkey is located in the center of Manhattan. We're located in the neighborhood Chelsea of Manhattan, and we are still pretty small. We're still under about 10 people, and we're hiring, by the way. So
let's go. So, I'm ready to move to New York.
Yeah. And it's been really fun. And as you said, our focus is on casual games. And right now, the casual game market is typically defined as being predominantly female, predominantly women in their 30s and 40s and 50s, although men and college students and kids and people of all ages do play casual games. It's just a matter of how you categorize them.
So, with that kind of customer dynamics, do you do anything different with the game designs, or how does that feed into what you do?
Making a casual game is very different from making regular console or hardcore games. You know, the audience of casual games isn't going to have many hours to spend learning how to play their title. And so with that in mind, everything that you need to show a player in terms of how to play has to happen within the first 30 seconds of trying the game. Also, the kinds of controls you use in casual games have to be a lot simpler than, you know, if you think of a PlayStation controller that has all these different buttons and shoulder buttons and X and A. You know, with a casual game, you're pretty much relegated, at least for the PC, to your left mouse button. And so it really gives the designer a lot of kind of structure for, you know, what they can do with in terms of designing the game. But it, you know, and some people might think it's limiting, but actually I think it actually lets you focus on what kind of entertainment experience you can give to the audience and giving them the best entertainment experience possible. What else is different about casual games? The themes of casual games are much different than what you would find in what people think of as your typical video games. You know, we expect when we make a casual game that not only are adult women going to play and adult men, but their children and their grandchildren and their nieces and their nephews. So really, when you're designing a casual game, you have to keep the broadest audience in mind possible. That means you wouldn't really want a lot of, you know, blood, guts, and gore, a lot of excessive violence. You know, any kind of themes that might be considered a little too adult might kind of veer into the R-rated territory. Those kinds of things really have not shown themselves to be successful within the casual game marketplace. So I love making casual games because the duration of casual game play is much shorter and quicker bursts of entertainment. The themes that you focus on are really just kind of fun and unique and not simply relegated to Dungeons and Dragons and, you know, wizards and stuff like that. I mean, the themes are very accessible, very much in tune with what's happening in pop culture. And I really enjoy the fact that I can make video games that a grandmother could play with their grandchildren and feel okay about it.
And that's really important, I think, that casual gaming space is not just entrepreneurial, but very high tech, which gets us to our first question around technology and how you first got into technology, Margaret. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure thing. It's a really good question. I grew up in a household where, you know, my father was always kind of bringing little gadgets home to play with them. And he was, you know, when video cameras first came out, he was one of the first people that anyone knew who had a video camera. So I think my interest in technology started from when I was a child. And then when I went to college, I was a communication major, and I studied the social impact of mass media on culture. So I sort of was a communication / anthropology kind of major. And when I was an undergrad, I studied the impact of new technology on society and how people use technology and to what end. Specifically, technology of everyday life was something that always fascinated me. So this is going to completely date me, but when I was an undergraduate, for example, I helped conduct primary research as a research assistant for a book called The Social and Cultural Aspects of VCR Use. So that was a hot topic way back when, you know, studying the VCR and VHS. And I also wrote an undergraduate thesis on how people were using ATM machines. I went to college as an undergrad in the 80s, and ATM machines were relatively new back then, and it was this kind of new thing around in terms of how people access their money, and instead of going to a human teller, they would, you know, use an ATM machine, and I just found that endlessly fascinating. And I think from that point on, I always was interested in how technology gets integrated into everyday life and how that transforms personal and also social experiences.
Well, you know, I think Larry still uses his Betamax, don't you, Larry?
Well, I've got these 7.5-inch floppy disks.
Okay.
So, Margaret, you have to tell us how you decided to be an entrepreneur and why you like it so much.
You know, that's a really great question, and I was speaking recently to a group of MBA students about this very topic. And, you know, I think that fundamentally when you as a person have a passion that is just bubbling up inside you, that you just can't contain your enthusiasm, and you just feel that you have this incredible calling to pursue something, I think that is a sign, you know, the beginnings of where at least my entrepreneurship came from. You know, as I mentioned, I started in the games industry about 10 years ago, back in the day, just as the dot-com boom was growing, and I started at a little company called PF Magic. And PF Magic made the first ever virtual pets. Dogs and cats, and then later a product called Oddballs. And for some strange twist of fate, I ended up working for this startup called PF Magic, and I think that was the first time I saw how a startup environment worked and how much fun it is to just put your heart and soul into something you really believe in. And back then at PF Magic, you know, when we worked on those virtual pets, we really believed in them. We loved those little critters that lived on your computer desktop. We would have knockdown, drag out arguments on the big questions of life, you know, should they live or die, you know, should they be allowed to breed. And I was just like, this is where I belong. This is the world I want to be. And software development really just, it's just the whole, it gives you everything at your disposal, you know. Whereas people who make film, for example, they have to assemble a cast, they have to find a script writer. You need that to a certain extent when you're doing software. At least in my eyes, it was more achievable. The forum for which I could see my inventions and my creative aspirations take life. Subsequently, after PF Magic, I had an opportunity to work at a few other startups. I was at a company called Shockwave.com in its early days. You know, just being on the West Coast, in the Bay Area, in the middle of the dot-com boom, seeing things work really well, seeing things fail just miserably, you know, just being part of that and being part of the excitement of, you know, having a passion and seeing it to fruition and then living and breathing it every day and every night, it's so much more fulfilling as a personal choice and as a way to live my life than almost anything I'd ever done before. I guess to kind of circle back to the beginning of your question, what inspired me to take the entrepreneurial route, I would say it was that burning passion. Part of me might be an inventor. You know, I really love coming up with inventions and seeing them implemented from start to finish.
You know, over the years, with all the different things that you've done, I'm sure there have been many people that have been important to you, have made a big deal of difference, have been a mentor, and so on. If you were to pick out one person, and I know that's tough, but if you could pick out one person who was your most important mentor, a turning point in your life, who would that be?
Oh, that's a great question. I keep saying that, but you guys are asking really thought-provoking questions and really difficult questions, so thanks a lot, Larry. To pick one person. Okay, off the top of my head, I would go back to my teachers, and if I had to pick one teacher, I would say it was a professor I had as an undergraduate in college. Her name was Julia Dobrow, and she, at the time, was a professor at Boston University, and for some reason, I don't know why, sheer luck, perhaps, she really kind of took me under her wing. Now, at the time, I was interested in being an academic. I was going to teach media, culture, and society. That was my thing. New technology was a focus, and she basically had me help her conduct research for her book, so I just got to learn so much about communication, intercultural communication, because she dealt with themes of that, and she also dealt with themes of the impact of new technology. And I just think that she opened my world in terms of, I don't want to say taking myself seriously, because I always took myself seriously, but I think she helped give me focus, and I think she helped give shape to my aspirations. And I really do have to credit her with giving me sort of that extra shot I needed to kind of focus like a laser beam, as another person in my life used to say.
Which you can't mention, because Larry said you only mentioned one.
Exactly. Note my self-control.
Yeah, very admirable. Well, teachers are really, really important, very important influence, and it sounds like this one in particular was for you. Along the way, in addition to having mentors and people who influenced you, you probably also had some tough choices to make, some things I think you mentioned earlier, you know, companies that either wildly succeeded or failed miserably. So what is the toughest thing you've had to do in your career so far, Margaret?
Okay, can I give you two answers for that?
Well,
of course, you can give us two.
Okay, I think the toughest thing that I had to learn in my career was to develop patience. You know, I grew up on the East Coast where, you know, people will say what they think without really thinking. And I believe early on when I started in the industry, if I felt impatience about how quickly we might have been progressing on a project, or if I saw, you know, one of the startups I was a part of maybe going down a path that didn't seem to make sense, like, look, 80% of your audience does this, why are we focusing on the 20% that don't really care, you know, type questions. And I think when I started off in video games in particular, and I was this brash and brazen 20-something-year-old, I would not mince words. And so I would just say, it's so obvious, we should do this and this. And I've learned the art, I think, of patience and diplomacy in the sense of everybody needs to be heard. And that's what makes a strong team. I mean, at the end of the day, the strong leaders are the ones who can kind of guide the team or make the decisions at the end of the day, but really everyone's opinion is valid, which I always believed, but just my impatience kind of, do we have to go through this? Do we have to go over this? Time's wasting. I've kind of cooled my jets a little bit on that front, and it's been very beneficial. And then closely related to that, or somewhat related to that, in terms of it being tough, is just knowing when you need to kind of cut your losses. If there is ever a path that you take in your career or a project you take on or business decision you make, and, you know, every business decision counts, even the smallest ones in 6 months or a year time can come back to haunt you for better or for worse. So there are times, you know, you want to make the best decisions, but there are times you're not going to make the best decision. And really coming to terms with that as soon as possible and acting on cutting your losses or rectifying something that may not be going as you planned as soon as you can, rather than letting something fester, which I think can be death to any startup. There's no room for festering. So there goes that impatience again.
Well, it's clear you've learned a lot being in a number of startups over the years. And I'm sure you could give some good advice to people that are just thinking about getting into a startup or being an entrepreneur. So if you were sitting here with a young group of people, what would you advise them?
In terms of giving advice to younger people who are interested in either beginning their own startup or joining a startup, it really depends on who that person is, what they're looking for, and whether they are starting something from scratch or joining something that's already happening. You know, I think that if you know that you're an entrepreneur early on, and my route to being an entrepreneur was a lot more circuitous than that, I think then the best thing to do is, first of all, try to get out there and meet as many people as you possibly can. There is no one in the industry that you're interested in who isn't worth talking to at least once. And it's just amazing. I'm sure you guys have had this experience too. You know, you'll meet somebody randomly at a conference or on a project, and 2 years down the line, you run into them. 3 years down the line, you see that person again. 10 years down the line, you still see that person. You both have done different things in your lives, but the people you meet along the way will be the people you encounter over and over. And so I think the most important thing is to get out there, meet people, talk to people, be a good listener. And specifically for women, I would say women who feel they have that entrepreneurial spirit need to, and I don't mean to stereotype, but need to kind of evangelize themselves and not be shy about putting themselves out there, because you're only going to get noticed insofar as you speak up, you know, in a lot of ways. Being a good listener, if you're planning to join a startup and you're at the very beginning of your career, you know, find out all you can about them before you work with them. I mean, you don't want to spend 2 or 3 years of your life working for something that has no future. So really just try to take every opportunity and really think about what's good for you. Don't feel compelled to act on an opportunity because you're worried another opportunity won't come your way. Ask questions and learn everything you can. And I think that's what I did, you know, starting out as an entrepreneur is, you know, with these different startups. And I just absorbed the culture. And I learned everything I could by hook or by crook and maybe even despite myself. But at the end of the day, that all kind of meshed together. And I draw from those experiences on a daily basis. I can say that for sure in running this company and my past company.
Well, networking or whatever we want to call it is really critical. That is a fact. Now, one of the things I can't help but think about is, here you've gone through all these different things. You've got this new company now called Rebel Monkey. How do you bring about balance to your personal and your professional lives?
Yeah, the balance thing, I would say that I think you'll meet a lot of entrepreneurs who don't bring that balance into their lives. And I would admit, for me, I go through phases where I will keep in mind that it's good to kind of take a breather, because when you own your own company, the work just never ends. You could work, you know, at 5 o'clock in the morning. You could work at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. There's always something to do. And there's always something to think about. And there's always something to address or fix or pay attention to. And so when I'm at my best, in terms of keeping that balance, because really, you know, if an entrepreneur becomes too myopic and too entrenched in their company and they don't get out and they don't see the world and they don't talk to people and they don't go to the movies, you know, they're not going to be very good at running their business because they're just going to be a mess. So when I'm really treating myself well and my business well at the same time, I am doing things like I'll go to the gym, I'll go to yoga. I have a lot of friends who are around me that I can draw on for support. I have other fellow entrepreneurs who are kind of at different stages of their own startup experience that I can kind of hang out with and commiserate with. One thing I've had to learn not to do is, and I'm not very good at it, so I try not to turn on the computer and check my email at 2 o'clock in the morning. I was doing just that this morning, so didn't really succeed this time. But, you know, it's always a matter of just remembering that, you know, the world isn't going to end if I take a four-hour break or I take a Saturday and I go on a road trip, for example. Or I go to a spa. Love going to spas.
Yeah, that spa thing, you know. Yeah. I mean, I really liked what you had to say there around treating yourself well and things going better for the business when you can. And in fact, it's been a theme of these interviews that people seldom have balance every day. It's more of an integration, mm-hmm. and it's more of a phase type of thing as well. So
we're actually going to take a train to the spa right after this interview.
We are.
Right?
We're going to the spa.
Yes.
This is my kind of interview. I'm going to go to the spa. I also thought that some of your remarks about that every business decision counts, even the little ones, and if you think about it that way, it's only obvious you're going to make some mistakes. I thought that that was also especially good wisdom. So, Margaret, this leads us to our last question around your future. You've accomplished a lot so far, and a lot of wisdom, a lot of great casual games, and critters, virtual critters that have personalities. And don't tell us if you killed them off or not. We don't want to know. we don't want to know. But what's next for you? You've already achieved a lot. Why don't you tell us what's down the road a bit for you?
Well, what is next for me and for Rebel Monkey? My heart and soul is basically poured into Rebel Monkey right now. And I have so much enthusiasm for what we're going to be accomplishing as a company. Again, because work environment here, you know, just a great work environment. The people we have hired, I mean, you know, we had some bumps along the way because it's a brand new studio. The people are great. So I want to keep the environment and the culture here at Rebel Monkey as positive as it seems to have always been so far. I have a great business partner, Nick Fortuno. He and I just, you know, not that we don't challenge each other, not that we don't disagree at times, but our competencies complement each other so well, and our vision for casual games is so much in sync. I want to maintain that. We're going to be coming out with some brand new titles at the end of the year. Everything that Rebel Monkey makes, just by the way, that sets us apart a little more than your average video game developer, we own everything we make. We don't do any work for hire. We don't do any contract work. We don't work with the larger brands because we don't own them. So the brands that we work out with are our babies, for lack of a better word, our pets. And I think as a company, we've made our mark in downloadable games for a specific audience. And I think we're going to be looking to expand our audience to other age groups. Because they're out there, they're already playing casual games, and I don't think there's enough content that's been made to serve them. So we're going to be just completely expanding our presence with these newer audiences and exploring other kinds of business models that are out there in addition to the try before you buy model, which is what you see with downloadable games. You'll download a game. If you like it, you pay $20 to own it forever. I think there's a lot of exciting stuff that I see happening in Asia and Korea around multiplayer gaming. That's pretty exciting. So I think that at Rebel Monkey came up with an impromptu tagline, you know, the evolution of casual games, and I really think that's where my co-founder Nick and I really want to put our focus. We want to evolve casual games to the next level. We want to expand the audience, and we want to make some really just blockbuster brands for people to enjoy with their families and with their friends.
Wow, that tell you, Lucy and Lee, you two really pull together some fantastic heroes for the National Center for Women and Information Technology series. This is just fantastic.
That's wonderful. And Margaret, it has just been fantastic. It's been really interesting to hear. I didn't know as much about casual games as I thought I knew, so now I know a whole lot more. It's been really interesting.
I'm ready to go download some and play them.
Me too.
Yeah, we'll take a train and get there. One way or
the other.
Margaret, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And by the way, you listeners out there, pass this interview along to others that you think would be interested, because they can download it as a podcast at w3w3.com. And, of course, it's mainly hosted
www.ncwit.org.
That's it. Tune in, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you, everybody.